So we're here today with Tom Lewis, former journalist and reporter and editor with a very impressive bio, who is now writing a website, and we'll link to that below. Tom Lewis, welcome to the state of Kentucky.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
So I came across your site some time ago because you were writing a lot about the climate crisis, and I bought your books and followed your site for a while. And then recently you wrote a four-part series called Why Trump Can't Win. And I read all of that and I was just intrigued by it. And I thought you did a really good job of analysis. So what I'd like to talk about today, instead of the climate crisis, which we may have another interview about, is your articles about why Trump can't win. Can you summarize that in, a few minutes? What are the reasons he can't win?
Yeah, let me start by saying that I come at this from the point of view of someone who's been an active political manager off and on over many, many years. I have managed campaigns, I have consulted, I've worked as a paid consultant to campaigns up to and including the presidential level. So I speak from the point of view of a political operative as and not an ideologue. I'm not My analysis isn't based on any trials or any policies, but on the practical realities of politics as I have experienced politics. And I begin with this fundamental point. We're being presented with a narrative by the mainstream press. All the chattering class says virtually the same thing. That we're a country that's bitterly divided, and our electorate is divided 50-50, 50% Democrats, 50% Republicans. Everybody assumes this. Almost everybody assumes this. I heard Chris Hayes the other day, just in an offhand way, the way you say something, it's so obvious you don't have to defend it. He said, well, Trump has a 50-50 chance of becoming our next president. There's no way to support that. Bill Maher said on his show not long ago, you can hate Trump, but you can't hate the Trump supporters because they're half the country. That's the assumption. Now, it matters because if you really think that half the country's Republican slash Trump and half the country's Democrat, then the only way you can win an election is by converting the people on the other side to your point of view. And a lot of people believe that that's the work of politics. A lot of people who should know better. I've had a recent argument with a candidate for Congress who thinks that's what politics is about. And I tried to convince him otherwise. I failed, and so did he. We will not hear his name again. If I can't tell you how many, people that I've approached and asked to volunteer for a political campaign who said, oh, I'm no good at arguing with people. No, that's not the work. And I'll give you the numbers that show you that that's not the work. The American electorate, the whole thing, the registered voters in this country, and this is also true of every single jurisdiction I've ever practiced politics in, is divided not in halves, but in thirds. This is critically important. One third Democrat, one third Republican, one third all the others. I refer to them as the independents. It's a mixed bag of all kinds of splinter parties and beliefs and whatnot, but independents just covers the people that will not declare their party affiliation. Now, when you know that, you know that the job of politics isn't converting Republicans to Democrat. It's different. Actually, right now, interestingly, the smallest portion of the American electorate is the Republican registered voters, who are 29%. Democrats are 39%. It's a 10 million voter difference right now. So if you're the Republican nominee, you have a heads up, you have a good leg up with 29% of the electorate. That's a long way from 50%. So you realize, of course, that your job is number one to motivate that base, let them know that you're running and get their support, hopefully all of their support. But if you got all the Republican support, you'd be at 29%. And that's not even close.
Mm-hmm.
You don't go to the Democrats because it doesn't work. You don't convert people from one party to the other. You have to go to the independents, who currently are 32% of the registered voters in the country. Now, there's a varying degree of independents who lean toward one party or the other.
Mm-hmm.
And one polling is another subject. We can get into that if you want to. It's a weedy subject. But suffice it to say that, number one, polls don't predict anything. And polls these days are not very good for a lot of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And we're seeing a lot of polling right now that says, oh, it's a tight race. It's a 50-50 race. Well, the people who say it's a 50-50 race are stacking the independent vote from last time around with the results they're getting from the polls this time around. And that's invalid because independents are not loyal. They're not as predictable. If a vote for a Republican candidate was predictable, it would be a Republican registered voter. An independent is subject to other influences, is not as loyal. Okay. So Mr. Trump starts with a good shot at 29% of the electorate. If the job of politics is to reach out to people and bring them into the fold and identify people who support you and give them a reason to be enthusiastic about you, that's not what Mr. Trump is doing. He is alienating his own people, his own base. Attendance at his rallies lately has been plummeting.
Mm-hmm.
I'm seeing video of half-full rallies and people streaming for the exits when he's only halfway through his speech.
Right.
He's not endearing himself to anybody. He's attacking his own people. He's attacking Republicans who are not sufficiently loyal. He's attacking this group and the other group. He is one of the nastiest people to ever run for president. Now, mm-hmm. that's not the way that you put together a political coalition and grow a movement. So his grip, even on the 29% of Republican registered voters, is not that solid. In the last several primaries, 20% of Republican primary voters, and you're talking about the most motivated and loyal of Republicans, voted against him when there wasn't another candidate in the race. Nikki right. Haley got out, and 20% still voted against Trump. Now, if you start at 29% and you lose 20% of the 29%, you're in even worse shape. Now, he got convicted of 24 felonies. And since then, we're seeing a 10% drop in independents who will vote for him. Independents who say they will not vote for him because he's now a convicted felon.
Right.
Whoa, 20% plus 10% subtracted from 29%. This is not good. His only hope, and I don't see there's much hope given that start, but his only hope would be to absolutely crush the independent vote. He's not doing it. The independents are not swinging toward him. They're swinging away from him.
Mm-hmm.
He was in better shape a while ago, but since the conviction, and there's another thing. People assume that everybody's interested in politics all the time. We who do politics know they're not. They simply are not. And when you take polls in January, February, you're talking to people who have no idea there's an election even going on, and they're just throwing out opinions that don't mean much.
Mm-hmm.
As you get closer to the election, you get people who are tuning in, and the last month or so, you have the maximum number of people focused on it. But until then, really the majority of Americans are not interested.
Mm-hmm.
There was a poll about 2 weeks ago that found that 20% of the independent registered voters surveyed did not know that Trump had been convicted of anything. You know, wow. We assume, you and I watch the news and we know the names of the candidates and we're checking every day. We are part of our own lunatic fringe, our own 20%, you know. That's not the life of the average American. The average American, like I say, tunes in the last weeks of a campaign. And if it's a close campaign, they can be decisive. So that's more than a few minutes, but that's the basis of my argument.
What sort of feedback or pushback have you gotten to your series of articles about this topic?
Oh, nothing other than the normal trolling that you get on Facebook and the objections of the people who will not be convinced otherwise anyway.
Okay. Have you had anybody who has agreed with you, particularly anybody who has your background in political work and candidate work?
Yes. And I'm not going to be able to remember his name. He's a Democratic consultant, and he has been appearing on more and more television shows recently, making essentially the same argument that I'm making, not so much based on registered voters, which is where I start, but based on polling, which is shifting dramatically. Every week, we're seeing 1, 2, 3 point moves in benefiting Biden, and we're seeing Trump losing ground. This is not the horse race that the media likes to talk about. It's not that the positions of the candidates are changing. It's that the attention of the voters is changing. Mm. And as more voters who were not involved in this come into it and look around, as the choices become clear. One point I like to make is that a poll is not an election. A poll predicts nothing. These two things are essential to remember. It predicts nothing. It's a photograph of conditions that existed at the time the poll was taken, and it may or may not be a particularly good photograph. But it says nothing about tomorrow.
Right.
Too many things can happen. Heart attacks, deaths, scandals, wars, that can completely change the dynamics over a period of hours. So until you have the votes counted, you don't have a result. And when you poll 6 months, a year before the election, you don't have a prediction that tells you what's going to happen with the election. You do have some information. When the polls are 49-49, you don't have any information. That doesn't tell you anything. But when the polls are 60-40, we should pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
And again, going back to this idea, I hear it every day from the chattering class. Oh, we're a bitterly divided nation. You know what? We're not. 60% and more of Americans agree on abortion rights, on taxing the rich, on Medicare for all. You know, Medicare for all has 70% support from the American mm-hmm. people. No national politician is even talking about it, with the possible exception of Bernie Sanders.
Right.
Drug price controls, common sense gun regulation, reducing military spending. The big issues all are agreed upon by 60% or more of the American people. Almost all. I can't think of one that's not. And here we have a campaign that is taking the wrong side of every single issue and doubling down on their support. That's not the way you win an election, especially when you start with 29% maximum support.
Right. So let's throw some black swans into the mix for a moment. Huh. Let's suppose that for some reason Trump drops out. I don't see that happening unless he is forced out by circumstances, but let's suppose that he drops out and the Republicans look around and run Nikki Haley because she got, you know, the second most votes. What do you think that changes? What do you think that does to the fall election? Do you think that Nikki Haley suddenly becomes zooming ahead because she can attract people from the independents that Trump cannot?
She would do better than Trump, but she'd be facing another headwind that I haven't mentioned yet, and that's the overturning of Roe v. Wade. That has 50% of the American people hopping mad, the female side. And if you know anything about females, you know they don't get over being mad real quick. And they tend to be able to extract a price when they get mad. This is a huge force in this upcoming election, and it's the reason I believe is going to be a Democratic blowout. And Nikki Haley might do better with a little better with independents. She might do better with Republicans, actually. But she would not be able to get around the fact that the Republicans are doubling down, doubling down. They're the dog that caught the car. They chased the overturn of Roe v. Wade for 40 years.
Right.
And they finally got it done, and they have suffered disastrous consequences. So what is their response? To double down, try to ban contraception, try to ban in vitro fertilization. We're watching a political party committing suicide. It's not something to gloat over. We need two functioning political parties in this country, but I don't see the Republican Party coming back for this for quite a while.
So let's flip it another way. It sounds to me like you're saying that that unlike many elections that have been about personality, that there's a possibility that this fall could hinge actually on a couple of policies. And that even if something were to happen to Joe Biden, the Democrats, if they run on reproductive rights and on some of these other issues, they're going to win anyway. Is that fair?
Yes, but not solely because of the policy, but because of the mathematics that I went over, because of the way the electorate is divided into thirds, and because of what you have to do to maximize your position. See, we've just had a raft. I mean, the mainstream coverage of this election has been just abysmal. We've just had a raft of stories about how Trump has erased Biden's fundraising advantage. Are you kidding me? Trump's fundraising is going to pay his criminal defense lawyers.
Right.
Biden's spending has set up 500 district headquarters across the country, an average of 10 per state. You know how many district headquarters the Trump campaign has set up? Zero. None. See, Trump has never run a large organization. He has no idea how to run a large organization.
Right.
He had a national organization sort of in the Republican National Committee, and he dismantled it. The Republican National Committee is now devoting most of its efforts to claiming that the 2020 election was rigged.
Right.
And they've been cut off at the head. So there's no organization. The money is not being properly spent. The appeals are not being made. His support is dwindling at a time when the only way you can win an election is to have rapidly growing support. And he seems to be deteriorating in his performance of the things that he's doing wrong.
If you were advising, I'm going to drop this down a little bit to like the state of Kentucky. We are a very red state, or at least we have been. We have some blue dots from Louisville, Lexington, a little bit in northern Kentucky, a few other places. And yet, we reelected Andy Beshear as governor, the most popular Democratic governor in the country. So, if you were advising our state legislative candidates and our congressional candidates, we don't have a Senate race this year. If you were advising them on how to run in this state, what would you tell them?
Well, I wouldn't tell them anything until I'd had a chance to review the situation. But just in broad general terms, what I'm telling every candidate I talk to, which is not many, I am retired. Every once in a while, you get a tailwind, and the tailwind for Democrats this year is abortion rights. The legislation to restore the conditions of Roe v. Wade has already been introduced. All we need is a Democratic majority in the House to get it done. That is the most powerful vote-getting argument a Democrat can use this year, and any Democrat that's not using that this year doesn't deserve to get elected. I mean, please. Democrats have been trying to get elected by being Republican light for too long. If in this situation they can't hitch up their pants and say, "Dang it, I'm going to be a Democrat for a change," and go into the teeth of this thing, but they are, and the Biden campaign has seen that, and they're giving it an appropriate emphasis. They're keeping it front and center, as they should. Kamala Harris has been surprisingly effective in taking point on that for the administration, and that's the big hammer this year. So any Democrat, I would start with that, and then we'd want to look at the numbers and see what the numbers suggest.
I'm very pleased that I was able to speak with you. I think your analysis is spot on, and I was unaware of your campaign consulting work, so that's exciting to have to hear as well. I'm going to be publishing your four articles about why Trump can't win, and I will link them below in the video and on the podcast.
Great.
I really appreciate your time. And I believe you and I have another interview scheduled to talk about your first topic, which was the climate crisis. But for today, I think we've covered some good ground, and I'm going to share your message with many, many people. Thank you
Thank
so
you.
much.
Thank you very much for sharing.